let's change the subject. I don't want to hear about that. He said the Saranagati is a big door to bhakti, but the problem is we have a big ego. And I suggested we talk about something else. I don't want to hear about that one. Yes, Prabhu? Very intimate way. Thank you. Anything else specific about the Bhagavatam, what we heard? Yes. That is bhakti. Thank you, Prabhu. Oh, yes, I shall. That we should, last one was, bhakti means to do as Krishna desires, to place Krishna in the center. And, as Prabhu said, it's difficult to walk through the door. Jai Jagadish Hari. Very nice. Our tea is always good. Anyone remember anything else? Uttara, yes. What? What about Uttara? Yes, and that child in the womb was who? Parikit Maharaj, who is a great devotee. Thank you. Anything else? Prabhu, you had? Yes. Yes, Asatama received knowledge of the Brahmastra without being fully qualified. He learned how to throw it, but not to withdraw it. So incomplete knowledge. Yes, Prabhu? Krishna is testing Arjuna. We should kill, we shouldn't kill. Yes. The ultimate, he was testing his understanding of religious principles, actually. And Krishna protected his devotees again and again and again. Because Krishna is Bhakta Vatsal. There is one verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye. This is describing the qualities of Krishna. Aishwarya means he has so much opulence. Sad Aishwarya Puna. Madhurya means so much sweetness. He's an ocean of sweetness. Karunye, compassion and mercy. He has unlimited swarupa purnata. This is what Krishna has in full. All opulence, all sweetness, and all mercy. But bhaktavatsalya, atma prajantavadanyata, that his greatest quality and most appreciated quality is his quality of bhaktavatsalya. How much he favors his devotees. And up until the point, parjanya, vadanya, atma vadanyata, that he even gives himself to his devotees. He offers himself to his devotees. Now, when we hear, as we heard in the Bhagavatam, how Krishna protected Arjuna from the Brahmastra, how Krishna has unlimited power, and yet he protects his devotees as his first and prime duty, because they are in his heart, and he is in their hearts. How dear the devotees are to Krishna, and how he protects them, and how, what happened with Uttara? Who remembers more what happened to Uttara? Asatama through the Brahmastra. The five Pandavas were there. Kunti Devi was there. And what happened to the Brahmastra? Sometimes I've noted that there were two. One aimed at the Pandavas, to finish off all the Pandavas, and one aimed at? Yes, at Parikshit Maharaj, to finish off the unborn child within the womb. And Krishna protected, yes, two. Yes, this is important. That Krishna protected the Pandavas from the outside with his chakra, and he protected the youngest of the Kauravas from the inside as the Supersoul, as the Paramatma, using his gada, his club. He protected the child. So Krishna is protecting his devotee. Kanteya pratijanihi pranashyati. This is Krishna's dearest and deepest promise, that he is going to protect his devotees. And as we know, and as we'll hear, very interestingly, we won't hear it this time, but in the next chapter, in the ninth chapter, when Bhishma Dev is ready to leave this world, this is specifically one of the main things that he is meditating on. Bhishma Dev, while dying, he's meditating with Krishna standing in front of him. And it's actually, there are three reasons why Krishna goes to see Bhishma Dev when he's dying. The first is that he wants to show Bhishma Dev that the Pandavas are right before you. And now they are the kings of the entire empire. The kings of the world. Because this will bring some satisfaction to dying Bhishma Dev's heart. The second reason he appears before Bhishma Dev when Bhishma Dev is dying is because Bhishma Dev is a great devotee, but his rasa with Krishna is chivalry, virya. And it's quite amazing that what Bhishma Dev was shooting arrows at Krishna. And Krishna was, those arrows would even pierce Krishna's body, his transcendental body. But because they were shot by his devotee, Bhishma, Krishna was accepting like that, like someone throwing flower petals at him. He was accepting it. Arrows thrown by his devotees, shot by his devotees, and piercing his body. He was accepting it like that. This is Krishna. This is the Krishna whom we are trying to develop our relationship with. He's accepting arrows from his devotees. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Arrows too. Because bhakti paritam asnami. Asnami means I will accept it. Because with bhakti I will accept it. That's the second reason. Bhishma Dev was meditating on that very scene. And Krishna wanted to be present before him when he left his body. Because he was a great devotee. And this is how Krishna... Just like when Parikshit Maharaj is leaving his body, he himself didn't come directly, but he came through Sukadev Goswami. This is the inspiration of Krishna. And it says in one of Prabhupada's purports in the later parts of the first canto, in the last few chapters, that this is one of the signs of Krishna's mercy, is when someone is leaving this world, a devotee is there. This will bring great auspiciousness. And the third reason why Krishna appeared before Bhishma Dev, does anyone know? Excuse me? No? Yes. 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 But there's something beyond the Mahabharata level too. Actually, and that's those are spoken, the principles of religion from the Shantiparva are spoken there. But there's something even more wonderful than that. Yes. 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 This is quite amazing. But there's something still more wonderful. Yes. Yudhisthira felt terrible. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna said, I fear this is going to happen. I fear this is going to happen. Thousands and millions of people are going to be killed. And Krishna dispelled his misery. Basically, he said, Nimitta Karan, Bhava Savya San, this is me who's killing them. And I want you to be the Nimitta Karan, the intermediary cause. So before the battlefield, the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna's grief was dispelled directly by Krishna. And after the battle, Yudhisthira felt the full weight of that misery that Arjuna had actually predicted. Millions of people were killed. Millions of people were killed to put Yudhisthira on the throne. And Krishna himself, at the end of this chapter, it describes how Krishna, he was able to convince Arjuna, but as Prabhu was saying, he couldn't convince Yudhisthira that there was no fault or sin on his part. Now, how is that possible? There is nothing that happens in this universe, within creation, within anywhere that Krishna is not in control of. He's the upadrashta anumanta. Anumanta means the permitter. He permits everything to happen or he does not allow something to happen. That means that Krishna, for his own purpose, did not allow Yudhisthira's grief to be dispelled because it was for another's purpose. And what was that purpose? He wanted Bhishma Dev to speak and remove the grief of Yudhisthira because he wanted to show that his devotees can do things that even he can't do. This is who we're dealing with in the Bhagavatam. This is Krishna. Now when we hear these glorifications of Krishna, when we hear how Krishna saves his devotees, glorifies his devotees, indeed, he gives himself to his devotees so completely, napariyaham, he becomes conquered by the love of his devotees, then what springs from with, what desire comes into our heart, we hope? What desire? Huh? Yes, we want to become a devotee. Naturally, if our faith is a little mature, or as Srila Jiva Goswami explains in the Bhakti Sandarbha, he says the beginning of faith is even thinking, maybe this is true. When you have no faith, you think maybe you hear something, you read some Krishna katha from the Bhagavatam, you think maybe it is true. And that doubt of materialism is the beginning of faith in Krishna, Jiva Goswami explains. And that faith, if watered by Shravanadi Jal, the ihan sechi ihan nitya sechi shravanadi jal, if ihan mali, if we water the faith, the shraddha, because the shraddha is the bhakti lata bija, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains. If we water that with shravanadi jal, with that water of hearing and chanting about Krishna, it will sprout and it will grow. And if we don't water that tender creeper, what will happen? It will wither and die. If we don't, in fact, Prabhupada said in Hong Kong many years ago, and he put it in Chaitanya Charitamrita, if we give up the hearing and chanting process, it is due to offense only. We think we're giving it up, but actually we're being shown to the door and given a good kick. We think it's free choice, but actually we're being escorted out due to aparadha offenses. So we want to develop our love for Krishna, because love for Krishna is the most wonderful thing. It saves us from repeated birth and death. We heard there are seven effects of chanting Krishna's name, beginning with cleansing the heart, removing the distress of material life. Shreya Karaiva Chandrika, the white lily of our spiritual life, blossoms. It gives us full knowledge. It is the taste that we are longing for, but cannot find in this material world. It is that taste. We're longing to taste the sweetness of sugar cane. You have tasted sugar cane? In Chinese, when you chew sugar cane, then after you spit it out, that part. There's a word for that in Chinese, the spit out part. It's such a good word. It is called jia. This is a good word, yes? It's just something spit out. But the material world, trying to enjoy in the material world, is trying to chew the chewed. Purnas, purnas, charvati charvanananam. Eat and try to get some sweetness out of something that is spit out, the jaw. That is spit out and no longer has sweetness in it. But rather than that, the asadaram that we are, pona amrita asadaram, it's the complete taste that we're hankering for. So, some desire should come, if we are fortunate, from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Not only hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, but this is part of the process. So now we've heard how the unborn child, Maharaj Prickett, has been saved. We also need to be saved. We want Krishna's protection. It's natural. And this point of looking only to Krishna for protection is called Sharanagati. Gotripte Varanam Tata. So now Kunti Devi, Krishna is on his chariot and prepared to leave. He had been with the Pandavas and Kunti Devi continuously. Year after year after year he protected them. And now their fortune had arisen. They were now, Yudhisthira was the king. But Krishna was returning to Dwarka, and he was on the chariot already, and he was about to leave. So Kunti Devi, this is the first of her prayers. Namasye purusham tvadyam Isharam prakriti param alaksham sarvabhutanam antarbahiravastitam namasye purusham tvadyam Ishwaram prakriti param alaksham sarvabhutanam antarbahiravastitam. So Kunti Devi began speaking to Krishna. Namaste, I offer you my humble obeisances. I offer my respects to you. I bow down to you. Why? Purusham, you are the Supreme Person. Adyam, you are the original person. You are the Supreme Personality of God. Kunti Devi knew this. Even though Kunti Devi, what was her relationship with Krishna? Yes. Vasudev, Krishna's father's sister. But still she knew, and Vasudev also knew, and Devaki also knew, Krishna's position as the Purusham Tvadyam. And he is Ishwaram, the controller, Prakriti Param, the supreme controller of the material world. Of course, Krishna is more than that, but he's also that. He's the supreme controller of the material world. And Kunti Devi has just seen Krishna protect the Pandavas because she was standing next to Krishna when he protected the five Pandavas from the Brahmastra shot by Asatama. But also, by Krishna's grace, she could see that he was inside the womb of Uttara, protecting Maharaj Prickett, who was unborn there. So he was inside, he was outside. Antarbahira vastita. That's the fourth line, that you exist inside and outside of everything. Everything. Krishna is outside of everything. He's inside everything. He's everywhere. Mama Angsa Teja Sambhava. He's in this piece of paper. He's outside of the piece of paper. He's in the air. I can't see the air, but I know it's there because I can feel it as I move my hand. He's there in the air. He's there in the fan. He's there in the light. He's there inside me. He's inside you. I think he's inside you too. Possibly. Yes, inside every single one of us. And outside, he's everywhere. But Kunti Devi says, Alaksham Sarvabhutanam. You are everywhere, but no one can see you. Because Kunti Devi is going to explain here, especially in this section, the process, somewhat indirectly, and Prabhupada will expand it in his purports, and we'll read from parts of Prabhupada's purports, but the process of developing our relationship with Krishna, how can we actually do it? But first, she's explaining something quite amazing, that he's everywhere, but we can see him nowhere. Alaksha Sarvabhutanam Anta Bahir Avashtitam. You are invisible. Alaksha, you are invisible. So here is Prabhupada's translation, and then we'll read half the purport. O Krishna. And just not imagine, because we shouldn't just use our imagination, but think of beautiful Gopinath on the altar. How beautiful he is. Are you thinking of him? What do you see that's beautiful? The beautiful peacock feather atop his head. What else is beautiful? about Gopinath? Huh? His eyes. Smile. Yes, it's Tribangalitam. What is the most beautiful, what is considered the most beautiful part? His smile. Yes, his, his smile. Lotus feet, yes. Yes, his smile. Maduram, maduram. Maduram, maduram. His smile is compared to the fragrance of honey. Madhuganda. Mridu smitam. The fragrance. When we think of honey, we don't think of this, of the fragrance usually. But we think of the taste. The fragrance of honey is very subtle. So Krishna's smile is very subtle. Not like this. It is very captivating. Very, very subtle. Compared, it is very soft. Mridu, smitam. It is very soft and very subtle. Maduram, 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 maduram. So he's so beautiful that, especially with the peacock feather atop his head, with his soft lotus feet. What color are the bottoms of Krishna's lotus feet? Pinkish red, so beautiful. His hands are like that, so soft that if a leaf falls on Krishna's body, it changes reddish color to a reddish color. So delicate. His eyes, like lotus petals, reach almost his ears. Curling, Kuntala. His hair is very curly and very dark. But here, in Hastinapur, he's also wearing armor. Not with a flute, and not with the peacock feather in that way. But he's wearing armor and a helmet. He's got a bow. But still so beautiful and appealing and attractive. So beautiful. And so sweet. And there he is sitting on the chariot after being with the Pandavas for so long. And he's leaving for Dwarka. So all the residents of Hastinapur are feeling very sad. And Kunti Devi ultimately is going to beg Krishna to not go. Don't leave us. It is impossible for her to tolerate the thought that Krishna is leaving. But she doesn't just walk up to him and say, Krishna, don't go. First, she offers her obeisances. She's aware that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though she knows him as her nephew. So she's going to glorify some tattva about Krishna, that he's invisible although everywhere. Because usually when something is invisible, we think it is not present. But Krishna is invisible but everywhere. And then in the next verse, we hear something about why, and we'll get the hint of how we can see him, remove the cloak of invisibility, and actually see him. So we'll read from Prabhupada's purport here. Does anyone know this verse, by the way? Namaste purusham tvadyam ishura prakriti param alakshasavabhutanam antabhirvastitam. So Prabhupada says, he is the Parameshwar, or the Super Soul. This is about in the middle of the purport. He is both within and without. Although he was present before Srimati Kunti as her nephew, he was also within her and everyone else. Indeed, Kapila Muni explains in the third canto that if one respects Krishna in the deity form and does not respect him in the hearts of all living entities, that is a lower class, a prakriti bhakta, a lower class of devotee, kanista. Because he's in everyone's heart. In the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the Lord says, I am situated in everyone's heart. And only due to me one remembers, forgets, and is cognizant, etc. What does cognizant mean? Aware, yes. What verse, the Sanskrit, please? Yes. So vasya tamadis mata smitam gyanam apona. For the devotees, vedes chasavar aham eva vidyo vedanta krit veda vid eda eva chaham. Through all the Vedas, I am to be known. So this alone we can speak about for so long. I am situated in everyone's heart and do only to me. One remembers, forgets, and is cognizant. That means that ultimately our Krishna consciousness too is dependent on Krishna's will. It is nothing that we can force our way through our ascending through our great powers of intellect or influence or anything. We cannot become Krishna conscious by our own power. We are dependent upon Krishna. So that's going to bring up the same question, practically speaking. How can we see this Lord who is everywhere but invisible? How can we, who don't have the power to become Krishna conscious, how can we become Krishna conscious? So Kunti Devi will ultimately speak about these things because she's going to describe here the process of becoming an actual devotee. Queen Kunti affirms that the Lord, although both within and without all living beings, is still invisible. The Lord is, so to speak, a puzzle for the common man. He's very mysterious. Queen Kunti experienced personally that Lord Krishna was present before her. Just see this person, how elevated she was, that Krishna was directly, personally in front of her. She was so elevated that she had a relationship with him. When there's some bandha or relationship, there is love naturally. From the aunt to the nephew, and from the nephew to the superior aunt. So there's so much love, naturally. So she is so exalted. So Krishna was present before her, yet he entered within the womb of Uttara to save her embryo from the attack of Aswatthama's Brahmastra. So Kunti herself was puzzled about whether Sri Krishna is all-pervasive or localized. He is standing in front of me, but he's everywhere. If he's everywhere, is this actually the Supreme Person who's right here? Because we think naturally with a material finite mind that something all-pervading cannot be personal and have form. This is the materialistic mind trying to understand the unlimited transcendence, the unlimited absolute truth. Because if I took a paper and ripped it up into 1,000 pieces and threw it, it would be all over the room, but the original paper would be gone. Similarly, with the material mind, we think that if Krishna is all-pervading, if the absolute truth, Brahman, is all-pervading, he can't be localized. If I'm here, I'm not there. Form means a limitation, a border. So we take this type of thinking and apply it to the absolute truth. And we understand by that Brahmeti. Vedanti tat tatvavidas tatvam ishganam adayam Brahmeti. We understand Brahman. So is this the process of understanding Krishna? No. We have to use a different process. So Kunti Devi was staggered by understanding that this person who is sitting right here on the chariot is all pervading. And she had seen Krishna enter within the womb of Uttara and save this child. So one thing question comes up which fits directly into the topic. Why would Krishna do that? There are so many thousands of children. He doesn't save them. Why is he saving this one? Why is he saving the Pandavas? If we read carefully and actively and intelligently, we should ask questions. Then our intelligence is expanded and then we'll be able to hear the answers. We should read actively. So, in fact, so Kunti Devi was puzzled whether he is all-pervading or in one place, localized. And in fact, he is both. Yes, that's what Prabhupada says. He is both. That is impossible. To be both all-pervading and in one place, localized. Unless you have a chintya shakti and your body is unlimitedly powerful. Later on, in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the 14th chapter, 13th and 14th chapter, Lord Brahma, who is so powerful himself, he sees this little boy wandering through the fields of Vrindavan, a village boy, holding a lump of food, yogurt, in his which hand? Left hand. He has no culture. Walking around, village boy, walking around just without shoes even. And he can't understand. Is this possible that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? This little boy? So he stole away the calves and the boys, and then he came back, and Krishna gave him a glimpse of his achintya shakti, his unlimitedly powerful body. Because Brahma came back and he saw the boys and the cows just as they were before. But then those boys and cows turned into Narayan forms, Narayan. And each of them, unlimited universes were coming from them. And they had unlimited opulence, and they were being worshipped by every living entity. And they were covered from head to toe with tulsi leaves. And these Narayan forms would enter in and out of this little beautiful boy Krishna's body. And Lord Brahma, after that, he said that others may say that they know something about Krishna and his power, but I will never say that. Those prayers of Lord Brahma, of course, are very wonderful. They're the topmost jnani speaking about Krishna, so they're spoken from that point of view, and they are wonderful. Achintya, inconceivable, inconceivably powerful body, inconceivably beautiful body, inconceivably wealthy, inconceivable. We cannot understand its limit. This is Krishna. This is who we're worshipping. This is Aishwarya, Madhurya, Karune, Sarupa Purnata. But but bhaktavatsalya. Bhaktavatsalya Krishna is all attractive. This is the most attractive feature of Krishna, that he's bhaktavatsalya. Because one thinks, if he's all-powerful, he knows everything, he's all-beautiful, he's all-wealthy, he's all-renounced, and all... I missed one, I think. Famous, yes. He's all-famous. Where does he get his pleasure from? He has iksha shakti. He can do exactly what he wants when he wants to do it. So what is he going to do? Where does he get his pleasure from? And everyone in the material world is thinking, this is what I want to be, basically. I want to be all powerful and then I could really enjoy. So what is the enjoyment of that person who has unlimited power? It's serving his devotees. Otherwise, he'd be a tyrant, practically speaking. This understanding of Krishna is so wonderful. It is the concept. Once I was in Bangladesh and I was dealing with some Bengali Christians who were running the school there, and they told us the translation. How do they translate God? Anyone know that? What's the Christian word for God in Bengali, Sanskrit, or anything? Anyone know? It's Ishwara. You probably knew, but you didn't know what I was asking. Ishwara, the controller. Ishwara, the controller. But the Prabhupada in the first verse, his purports to the first verse of the Bhagavatam, he says, we're talking not about God. He makes the distinction right in the beginning. We are not talking about the controller. We are talking about something more wonderful than that. Controller means controller of what? Controller of the material world. If he's the controller of the material world, what does he do before the material world is created? Just how many more minutes? Have nothing to do for so long until there's no... He's dependent. His existence is dependent on the material world's existence if all he is the controller. It's like if there's a king without a kingdom. There's no meaning. But Krishna, Prabhupada explains, is the absolute truth. Param Satyam. And the Bhagavatam is a meditation on the most intimate manifestation of that absolute truth. On Krishna. It's leading us to Krishna in Vrindavan, where Ishwara, he delegates that to the expansion of his expansion of the expansion of the expansion. And instead in Vrindavan, he's doing just what he wants to do. And what is that? He's serving the devotees, the Brijbasis. That's what's going on in Vrindavan. The Brijbasis only desires to serve Krishna, and Krishna's only desire is to serve them. That's what Vrindavan is. And this is a puzzle. It is the greatest puzzle, because it so much resembles the activities of the material world that without understanding who this person is, who's wandering without shoes through the forests of Vrindavan, herding the cows with a stick pushed, a flute pushed under the cloth over there, a buffalo horn under his arm, with vanamala so beautiful, being decorated by the cowherd boys before he goes out with the minerals of Vrindavan, without understanding who this boy is, we will become completely bewildered. Without understanding that he has Achintya Shakti, and without understanding what Achintya Shakti is, and we understanding that we can't understand what Achintya Shakti is, that he how do we understand unlimitedly powerful? As soon as we try to conceive of it, we understand by definition it's more than that, because it's unlimited and we can't place it in our consciousness. So Kunti Devi is puzzled whether Krishna is all-pervasive or localized. In fact, he is both. And listen carefully to the next line of Prabhupada's purport. But he reserves the right of not being exposed to persons who are not surrendered souls. Alakshasarvabhutanam. He's invisible. He does not reveal who he is. It's his because he can do as he's like. He likes. He is swatantra. What does swatantra mean? Swarat. He is independent. He is the only person in existence. And he is a person who is independent. Because everyone else is resting upon his power. Just like right now, I am sitting on, or my body is resting on this asan, or you can say the cloth. And the cloth is resting on the cushion. And the cushion is resting on the wood. And the wood is resting on the marble. And the marble is resting on the concrete. And the concrete is resting on perhaps the foundation, deeper foundation, the footers or something. And then that's resting upon the earth. And the earth is resting on some shakti. And that's resting on something in the universe. And if we trace what everything is resting on, everything is dependent. But the thing that ultimately everything is resting on, and who is not resting on anything else, he is Krishna. And yet he's wandering around the fields of Vrindavan without his shoes. And his mother, when the Brijbasis see, they, by Krishna's grace, after Varunadev, after they hear from Nanda Maharaj how Varunadev has glorified Krishna, they ask what their destination is. They ask Krishna, what are we going to get? This is the Brijbasis. They're so innocent hearted. They ask Krishna, what is going to be our destination? Will we get liberated after we leave? After we die? So Krishna first takes them to Brahman to give them that experience, and then he pulls them out, and then he brings them to Vaikuntha, where Krishna is worshipped. Goloka or Gokul or Goloka in Vaikuntha. And they're seeing Krishna there being worshipped by all the demigods. But Krishna's not able to come over because there's so much Aishwarya Bhav, there's so much reverence due to his power. He can't come over and sit on their laps. And he can't go over. And they can't go over to him because there's so many demigods there. And they're thinking, if Mother Yasoda sees this, she's going to be in so much anxiety because she's going to be wondering, Krishna must be hungry now. Krishna must be hungry. He hasn't eaten. He hasn't eaten. And I can't walk over to him and feed him. So even seeing this, and then Krishna brought them back down to just where they were before, which was the highest place, Goloka Vrindavan. But seeing this, these opulent, powerful manifestations of Krishna, they saw it, but they were not attracted.
Because it lacked the intimacy with Krishna. Krishna would come and sit on their laps. How is it that we are so attracted to Krishna, they asked. And how is it that Krishna is so attracted to us? So in seeing Vaikuntha, they missed that. We don't want to stay here. This is the Brijbasis, but very difficult to understand. In fact, it's impossible to understand unless Krishna reveals himself. I am like this. And what did Prabhupada say in the purport? To who he reveals himself to? To those who are surrendered to him, who say, Krishna, I am yours, and become Krishna's. Then, yayatam mam prapadyante, taiva vajamya mamavat manavatante, that Krishna naturally, it's natural. It's completely natural that you only reveal your heart or how much money you have to those you trust. Completely. You don't walk around with a big sign saying any of those very important and intimate details about your life. No one does that. The things that are very intimate and closest to our heart, maybe there's one or two or three people we speak to these things about. So Krishna does not, and it's a matter of trust, because a person who you don't know for a long time, you don't know the person's character, he's not proven himself loyal to you. What will he do if he knows intimate details about you? He'll exploit you. He'll exploit them for himself. So therefore, surrendered means someone who has placed Krishna in the center. That his desire is to please Krishna. So such a person who is fixed in that is a trustworthy person. And to those persons, Krishna reveals himself to them because he can trust them. Now what stops someone from seeing Krishna? This checking curtain, which is going to be described in the next verse, that which disallows us from seeing Krishna is called the Maya energy of the Supreme Lord. And it controls the limited vision of the rebellious soul. So on one hand there's a surrendered soul, and on the other side of the curtain is the rebellious soul. So the surrendered soul has put Krishna in the center, and the rebellious soul has rebelled against his natural position as Krishna's servant. And who does he have in the center? Me. A rebellious soul in the language of the Bhagavad Gita is called asura. And Prabhupada would sometimes say, Bhagavad Gita said, there are two kinds of living entities in this world, the suras and the asuras. And then there are the asuras who are trying to become suras, the ones who have a nature that is quite rebellious, but they're trying to come to the other side and trying to surrender to Krishna. So that curtain that limits our vision is called Maya. And Prabhupada ends this purport by saying, it is explained as follows. And then after this is explained, this Kunti Devi is going to give, excuse me, some hints. And they're all the hints are there, but how the curtain can be lifted. And I can see for myself, my tendency is I want Krishna to lift the curtain. But my business isn't to tell Krishna what to do. Rather, Krishna's business is one day to lift the curtain, but that's his business. But what's my business? That's what I should meditate on, not what Krishna's business is. So what's my business? Huh? Yeah, to surrender. To serve him with devotion, to place him in the center, to surrender. That's my business. I read one time somewhere, it wasn't a devotee book, but he said there are three businesses in this world. There is your business, my business. There is everyone else's business. And there is God's business. Usually, we're minding everyone else's business. Or God's business. This person should be doing this, and this person should be doing that. But when we're minding everyone else's business, there's no one to mind our business. And what happens when no one minds your business? Your business doesn't, it collapses due to neglect. So a very important point in Krishna consciousness is to mind your own business. Yes? I'm looking at it. Yes? No, me. Today we had a quarrel. I was minding her business. It's true. But really, that's the secret in relationships, all relationships, including our relationship with Krishna. It's mind your own business. For everything from the temple president to the spiritual master to the everyone, we take care. What's my service? This is a devotee's meditation. What's my service? Same point. What's my service? Because we're servants. And this is the most difficult thing. It's impossible for a conditioned soul to accept that I'm only a servant, an insignificant servant. And as soon as I really accept that I'm a servant, then the next question is, what is my service? And we want to do that with devotion. Okay, now we'll talk about the curtain, because that's what Kunti brings up next. So first, Krishna, you are inside, outside, and everywhere, but you're invisible. You are everywhere, but I see you nowhere. Or sarvabhutanam, alakshasa. No one can see you anywhere, although you are everywhere. Why? Maya javanikatshanam agyadadhokshadamavyayam nalakshase mudhadrisha nato natyadaro yata. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor. What does irreproachable mean? Excuse me? Yes, exactly. You're irreproachable. No one can find a fault. Everything you do, Krishna, is perfect. Everything you do is perfect, Krishna. You are eternally the eternally irreproachable factor, covered. So there's a very wonderful and hidden meaning even in that, that makes us think about Braja. Because everything Krishna does is perfect, because he defines what truth is. When he steals, it is not wrong. When he dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night, he is irreproachable. He's perfect. Everything he does is perfect by definition, just by the fact that he does it, because he is the absolute truth. That time when I was in Bangladesh and dealing with those Christians, a man asked, did I mention this recently? He asked, how could you worship a god that dances with the wives of others in the middle of night? This is the danger of talking the intimate pastimes of Krishna, the most intimate pastimes of Krishna, to people who don't have the understanding of Krishna, of who Krishna is, of what God is. That he defines purity. And we cannot imitate. So he's beyond the range of limited sense perception. We cannot see him. He is invisible. We cannot see him. Invisible means we cannot see him. You are the eternally irreproachable factor, but covered by the curtain of deluding energy. Maya is covering you. Not covering you exactly, but covering my eyes. And I cannot see Krishna, because Maya covers my eyes like the cloud doesn't cover the sun exactly, but it covers my ability to see the sun. Similarly, Maya does not cover Krishna, because Maya is under the control of Krishna. Maya cannot come before Krishna. Abhimukhe valajamanam. She cannot come before Krishna. The cloud cannot be on or close to the sun, because the sun is so powerful, it dissipates anything. Maya can cover us. And disallow us from seeing Krishna, from having a relationship with Krishna. And deludes us into thinking that I am the center of existence. Ahankara vamudatma kartaham iti manyate. Ishwaraham mahambhogi siddham balavansuki. This is what Maya does. Dazzles us. The forms of Maya, in one of Prabhupada's purports, or possibly one of the verses, he compares it to a prostitute who keeps on changing her dress. And if you're not attracted by one dress, you'll be attracted by another dress, if you're that kind of a person. And if you're not, that's her business. That's the prostitute's business, to attract the mind, and that is Maya's multifaceted, many-aspected approach. The same thing, but in different dress only. The same thing in different dress. You are the center. You are the enjoyer. You are the controller. You can do this. You can do that. You tried to do that, but you couldn't. But you can do this, and you can do that. And you, me, 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 me. You're the center.
and this person has done something you don't like. He should be moved out of the way, even killed. This is what Maya does to people in this world. It makes them line up old men and old ladies and children, and feeling fully confident that they're doing the right thing, make them dig holes, graves, and then... This is the... And then, just to a sane person, not in that particular insanity of that Maya's force, we think that's the most... How could they possibly... But we should know, when Maya changes her dress in a way to bewilder us, she can do anything. A soul under the influence of Maya and false ego is capable of anything. Look at the animals that are being killed and eaten. A sane person, a sensitive person, cannot even think about it. Cruelty. Such cruelty. So we think, oh, that's terrible. But it's all based on the same thing. And in the Purva Janma, we've done everything terrible. Maya is so powerful. And there is only one hope to be free from Maya's influence of that curtain, is Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar. We have to become, we have to place ourselves in the sunlight of Krishna. In the sun, Maya, like the cloud, cannot come. So this is what we're trying to do. This is the process of Krishna consciousness, to become Krishna conscious, always in Krishna's presence, by chanting Krishna's names, by remembering Krishna, by serving Krishna one way or another, but always Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. I'm doing this for Krishna. This is devotion. This is devotional service. This is being in the presence of Krishna. And Maya cannot come close. This is the only protection. But Maya is very powerful. So, why can't we see Krishna? Prabhupada explains in his purport. I'm going to summarize some parts and then read some parts. He explains that Krishna displayed the most wonderful pastimes in Vrindavan. But he mentions the killing of Putana, the lifting of Govardhan Hill. So he showed himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the greatest, purest, most learned authorities accept Krishna, pure persons, non-deceptive persons, they accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But people can't accept it. People in general, even though Krishna displayed his pastimes, and the greatest authorities accepted Krishna's position, people in general cannot accept it. And Prabhupada says, they're reluctant to accept the Lord as the Supreme Absolute Truth. Because again, it's very difficult. He's all-pervading and he's localized. And not only is he localized, he's the most beautiful, softest, sweetest boy wandering around the fields of Vrindavan. So why can't they accept Krishna as the Absolute Truth? This is partially due to their poor fund of knowledge, this tattva vibhrama, and partially due to their stubborn obstinacy. We're fixed in Maya.
determined thieves, dishonest, obstinate. Obstinate means what's a stubborn. They're stubborn. No, I want it. We're averse to Krishna. Such persons could not recognize Lord Sri Krishna even when he was present before them. So unless we have the right consciousness, even if Krishna is right before us, we will not see him. Alaksha Sava Bhutanam, Prabhupada saying. Another difficulty is those who depend more on their imperfect senses cannot realize Krishna as the Supreme Lord. We want to know everything by our senses and our intelligence. Such persons are like the modern scientists. They want to know everything by their experimental knowledge. But it is not possible to know the Supreme Person by imperfect experimental knowledge. What they use cyclotrons. Do they have some big cyclotron in India or something? Yes? So they take atomic particles and using magnetic forces, they speed them up. And then what do? They smash them into an atom so it breaks. It's so gross, actually. They smash it, speed them and smash it into an atomic particle. And then they take until it breaks into pieces. Because they want to find out what is ultimately there. But it's so gross. And then they take in a subatomic particle. And then they take another subatomic particle, a smaller one, and speed that up and then smash it into that and break that further. So just imagine that with this mentality, if they found the super soul, you know, they'd want to like break him open. Because this is the demonic mentality. So is Krishna going to reveal himself to this mentality, to this experiment? No. He just bewilders them. And for every new thing they find out, it raises hundreds of new questions. It's impossible to find Krishna in this way. Because we don't see with our eyes, we see with our mind. And as we all know, that it takes a mind of devotion. Yam sharma sundaram achinta guna sarupam. We have to become actual devotees. And then Krishna will trust us, and then he'll reveal himself to us. And again, if we try to do it by our experimental knowledge with these demonic type of techniques, why will he just show us more and more Maya and bewilder us more and more and more and more and more? So Prabhupada is so heavy in criticizing this to remove this type of mentality from us, because these are obstacles to our becoming devotees, developing devotion. But it is not possible to know the Supreme Person by imperfect experimental knowledge. He is described here in his Adhokshaja, or beyond the range of experimental knowledge. All our senses are imperfect. We claim to observe everything and anything, but we must admit that we can observe things under certain material conditions only, which are also beyond our control. The Lord is beyond the observation of sense perception. So the point that's being made here by Srila Prabhupada is that there is a curtain and it's impenetrable. We cannot go beyond it by our own power. And this curtain, Maya Javani Katschanam, disallows us from seeing Krishna, who is in everything and outside of everything, everywhere. And we cannot see him anywhere. He's everywhere, but we cannot see him anywhere because of Maya. Maybe I should stop now, so we can ask for questions. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes. Prabhu.
You said that Krishna will reveal to us only when he will be trusting us. We have to gain his trust. So how do we really gain his trust? How does a person really gain the trust of Krishna?
Well, who can you trust?
There are many reasons or there are many qualities required for me to trust somebody.
But what's the main one?
He doesn't reveal what I told to others. He keeps it as a secret.
But what type of mentality will cause him not to do that? Huh? Loyalty? How about love? If someone loves you, does your daughter trust you? She certainly does. Does she trust you?
I hope.
You hope. We know. Because she trusts, she loves, because you love her, and she knows that you'd never do anything. Do you ever walk across the Bombay streets with her? Did you ever do that? And she's holding your hand or something like that? Is she in any anxiety? Yes, that may be, but she's not in anxiety. Because she knows I'm holding on to my father's hand. And he loves me, and he would never let anything happen. What was your question again?
How to gain the trust of Krishna for,
oh, yes,
for him to reveal...
I already answered your question. Krishna promises
that... Yeah, but in spite of all the reading, all this, coming here, everything, then why we have so much fear, we don't want to surrender?
We?
I.
We have to mind our own business. Was that the, I didn't answer your question. So you can answer that question, and I can answer it for me. What am I afraid of? So I think that there's many ways to deal with that, but it takes gradual purification to have so much faith and trust and love in Krishna that you give yourself to him. I think it takes a... Some people have it naturally, it seems. Maybe they developed it in previous births. They're carrying that type of punya, bhakti punya. Some people it takes a long time before they can give themselves to Krishna and place themselves in Krishna's hands. But I know that life is like one of those, what is it? Sand clocks, hourglass. That the greatest challenge in our life, even though is to, by the time the sand of our life has run out, that we'll have to be able to depend on Krishna and surrender to him, because there won't be anything else that we have. And if we don't have that, we have nothing. So we follow the process of devotional service. We try to chant sincerely. We try to serve. We pray to Krishna to help us. And we gain the experience of a life in devotional service. That yes, Krishna has helped me so many times. He's really there. He's really going to help me. Mysterious as he is, and having his own way as he does, I trust that he's going to. This is what we are meant to acquire in life. Because this type of faith, Shraddha, is transcendental. It doesn't come from this world. And if we have that, we have gained entrance towards the spirit, to the spiritual world. That's the doorway. If we don't have that, but we've gained so many other things in this world, what have we gained? We have to leave it behind. Well, this we can take with us. This is all we actually have. And to live a life of dependence on Krishna, this is what the song of the Avanti Brahmana, this is what he says, Paratmanishtam. I will cross the ocean of the material world by being firmly fixed in my dependence on Krishna. So whatever holds us back, we should do our part to try to remove. But ultimately, we have to depend on Krishna's mercy. Another problem?
So it is that if sometimes I also do it, but if I
sometimes you used to make offenses?
Means in the sense they offend the brahmacharis or something like that. And if I correct them, so it is right way, as you are telling that we should mind our business. So,
but part of your business is to not listen to offenses to the brahmacharis. That's part of your business. You have association is very important, so one has to be careful who one associates with. Yes, you should associate with the brahmacharis. Are they very nasty and terrible? They say, Prabhu. Why? The brahmacharis are so nice.
Not like that, but indirectly they say, no, this is not right, that is not right. So I try to correct them. So, no, they won't listen. So correcting right, like that is right, it is okay or...
Without knowing, but that's different from... That's having a philosophical discussion. That's not being offensive. But sometimes you may not know the answer to certain questions. So then you can ask some of the devotees of more experience and more knowledge to help you. You can ask them sometimes if they would like to come to the temple and take prasadam, and then the doubts they have, they can present it to the devotees. Do you do that?
I see. I should not use the word we, so I'm using the word I. I see that in the Bhagavad, most of the stories of devotees, especially in the first cantos, like Pandavas, Bhishmadev, and then also Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, now their life is full of troubles, anxieties, and therefore it appears that, you know, they had no other choice other than to take shelter of Krishna. So should we also put ourselves in those kind of conditions, or usually I try to be comfortable materially so that my devotional service is easier to practice. Otherwise, you know, by reading Bhagavad, it seems that unless we go through these situations like the Pandavas, you know, it's not natural to take shelter of Krishna.
The Pandavas didn't take shelter of Krishna because of their difficulties. They had difficulties because they took shelter of Krishna. We're all laughing now, but if it was us, we wouldn't be laughing. But just see how much Krishna loved and trusted the Pandavas, that he knew that whatever tribulations and difficulties he gave to them, they wouldn't shake at all from their devotion to him. So Krishna uses these very, very intimate and fixed devotees to teach us these eternal associates to teach us that there is no other goal. But later on, Kunti Devi is going to say the most amazing thing, which really answers this question so directly. That she's going to say that I prefer the difficulties, a million, million times difficulties, with your presence there, than no difficulties without you. So difficulties or non-difficulties for a devotee don't make any difference. All the devotee wants is to be with Krishna and for Krishna to be with them. So therefore, from that, we can just, and because none of us like difficulties. It's like if someone says, I'll take the difficulties if I can have that jewel. So then, when we think of how great the difficulties are, we can just imagine the value of the jewel. Otherwise, we have no access to the understanding the value of the jewel. So all the difficulties of the world, even death piled on Maharaj Pariksit, even becoming a demon piled upon Chittaketu Maharaj, didn't make any difference to them. Even being close to death by the residents of Vrindavan, they were only concerned with thinking about Krishna and Krishna's pleasure and how to please Him. So just imagine how pleasing to the soul, to the person, is pleasing Krishna. That the difficulties become meaningless. When compared to the great treasure that they're carrying with them of their relationship with Krishna. So for us who don't have the relationship with Krishna, we can use that to get a glimpse at how sweet and valuable that relationship with Krishna must be. They won't trade it for anything. They won't trade it for anything. Najanam, nadanam, najanam, nasundarim, kavitam va, jagadisha kamani, mama janmani, jilis, vatadvabdi, rahai, tigitwe. All I want is your service. Not wealth. The whole world is running after wealth. Not a beautiful partner. The whole world is running after that. Not fame. Not beautiful poetry. The whole world runs after these things. And the devotee kicks them away. And therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was asked by his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to accept Srila Gaukeshwar Das Babaji as his spiritual master. So he wrote something after. And he said, after examining the... Because Srila Gaukeshwar Das Babaji Maharaj was fully a kinchana, no material attachments whatsoever. So he said, after examining, and I'm paraphrasing this, after examining the character of my spiritual master, I've understood that only a devotee can have integrity in this world. This isn't exactly. Because for everyone else, we have a price to sell our soul, ourself. You know, I like my freedom, but for this I'll give up my freedom and get a job. I want this, but when this comes along, I'll throw that away. But a devotee cannot. A bribe comes along. You know, I'm a minister. I'm this and that. A bribe comes along, and I take it. But for a devotee, a real devotee, there is nothing that the material energy can offer him that will break his integrity. His integrity means his commitment to Krishna. His giving Krishna, he can't be bought off by the material energy, by the prostitute of Maya. So only a devotee, in fact, can have true integrity in this world, because he cannot be bribed by Maya. He cannot be bribed by Maya. So just imagine how wonderful it is to be a devotee. If there is nothing in the material world like Teko Haridas, he was chanting and chanting and chanting, and Maya Devi herself came to try to lure him and break him. So she couldn't. So just imagine what is there in the holy names. Just imagine. But I think we should stop right at last question, and then we should stop. Yeah?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Prabhu, from your lecture today and yesterday, I'm trying to get the essence as surrender. And after the lecture, you mentioned that this fear which we have from surrendering can be overcome by love, which we feel when Krishna reciprocates with us, and then we try to reciprocate it back. So,
because the faith increases by then.
Yes, yes. And there are times when we want to take that step towards surrender, and we ask help from senior devotees whether should we take this step or not. Even we have such a strong desire, but we want to take shelter of devotees when we take this big step, and we get mixed responses of whether we should take this step or not. So even though you want to surrender, I mean, from within, you feel that you're not qualified to take this big step.
Well, one thing is, if you ask enough doctors, astrologers, and you always get a mixed response. If you ask enough people, you'll get different answers. And stock market brokers. So you can't ask too many people. You have to find one person or two people that you actually will trust and listen to their answer. They're more experienced than you. So you listen. And sometimes, though, they want to test you, like Narada Muni was testing Dhruva Maharaj. He told him to go home, you're just a boy. And Dhruva Maharaj said, I may be a boy, but I'm a Kshatriya boy, and I want a kingdom bigger than my father's or my grandfather's, basically bigger than the universe. He was a child, but he was so determined. And when Narada Muni saw that determined spirit, his instructions changed. So not that we're getting advice and then, you know, we should show our determination to do what we want, but we should have an open enough relationship with the person who we trust that we can speak to and express our mind. If they still insist, we follow it. But we can question it. We're allowed to do that. We've seen many devotees over the years in their new, fresh enthusiasm go like this. I want it all at once. And then, after they are running for a while like that, they look back. And then they think, only if I could have had that, I wish I had done that, I wish I had done that. And then their running forward turns into reverse gear and they go back to grab, to take something that they really wanted to have on a certain level. So very much the instructions that were given now are very practical. They tend to be slow and steady. Go slowly but steadily. But if we can go fast, we should do it. But we should go slow and steady. But if we can go fast, we should do it. But the general instruction is to go slow and steady. So you'll tend to get both of those, and you need some person who, and you have those people who you'll listen to, because the mind is very tricky. It wants to go very fast and attain Krishna, but sometimes for its own reasons. And they're not always pure reasons. So, dire dire. But again, the most important thing is to take instructions from a wise person who you trust. Because otherwise, we'll end up asking enough people until someone tells us what we want to hear. And then we'll say, very good doctor, very good astrologer. I know you're intelligent because you agree with the way I think. That's the proof of your intelligence. The mind is very tricky. Yes. Thank you very much.